The first ever criminal trial of a former president begins this week. I'm former U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, and this week, legal expert Ricky Kleeman joins me on my podcast, Stay Tuned with Preet. We talk about jury selection, the latest trial developments, and legal strategy.
From the defense point of view, for Donald Trump to be signing checks for Michael Cohen, it would have been something usual because Michael Cohen was working for the Trumps.
The episode is out now. Search and follow Stay Tuned with Preet wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome back to The Fighter versus The Writer. I'm Damon Martin. He is Matt Brown. And Matt, we are back for another week and another week closer to you punching somebody in the face. I will continue to kick off every single show with that until May 13th rolls around. How is face punching practice going for the Immortal?
It's going very well. I'm doing a lot of punching, elbow, face elbowing, face kicking, face kneeing. So, yeah, all the are getting sharp, man.
It's coming close. I realized, so we were talking, there was some news out today. It was a weird one because there was a rumor that the UFC was trying to book Umar Nurmagomedov against Merab Dawalashvili as the main event on May 13th. And that's your card, of course. And I saw that and I was like, okay, that's interesting. And then I was like, hold on now. Wasn't there already a main event for May 13th? And it's Anthony Smith against Johnny Walker. So I was like, what's going on? Well, long story short, Umar Nurmagomedov is not fighting Merab Dawalashvili. Merab's still dealing with some lingering injuries from the Peter Yan fight. And let's be honest, that's a two-month turnaround for another five-round fight. That's a lot to ask of Merab Dawalashvili. So the fight's not happening, but I was kind of like, why are they trying to book a main event for a card that already has a main event? So I did some digging today. From my understanding, there's no problem with Anthony Smith and Johnny Walker, at least from what I can find out. So I have no idea why that was happening or how that started to happen or who had the idea for that or what. But either way, as far as I know, Anthony Smith and Johnny Walker are still headlining the card you're on. And as we all keep hearing, it's going to be a fight in front of people. We don't know where yet, but it's going to be a fight in front of people, which I know is exciting because, dude, I'm over the apex.
I just want to know where, man. I don't really care where. I'm not really sweating it, but it's like I got people asking me every day, like, bro, where's your fight at? I want to get tickets. Everybody's trying to come out, and I want to know what the medicals I have to do, right? Like, depending on the different states, like, I have to do different medicals. I want to know if I need to get adjusted to a different time zone. There's just a lot of things. It's really I don't ever remember not hearing about a location. I think we're 7 weeks out now.
Yeah, it's weird too, because like I said, this is getting pretty close. Like, generally by now they got tickets on sale. You know, they're trying to get things, you know, moving. And it's weird that they don't have this announced. I've heard rumors. I'm sure you've heard the same rumors. I heard rumors that maybe Nashville, but if that's the case, like, why, like, what's the holdup in like confirming it and then tickets going on sale? Cause 7 weeks, that's not very far. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you got to sell tickets. You got to get everything arranged. Like, it's just a really weird situation. But I've heard the same as you, which is, at least assuming you're hearing the same as me, which is it's going to be in front of a crowd. Like, that's all I've heard. I've not heard anything else besides. I've heard it's going to be in front of a crowd. We just don't know where.
In other words, it's not going to be at the Apex is all we know.
Yeah, all we know. But that's exciting enough. But in your case, absolutely. Like, you want to know all these different things. Like, you got a lot of logistical stuff to figure out.
Yeah, even confirmed, right? Because like, they're kind of holding off because they're like, well, we got the Apex just in case, right?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I'm over the Apex. Like, this last weekend, they did the card in San Antonio, you know, 16,000 people. Wasn't even that big of a card, if we're being honest. Great main event, but it wasn't like it was that super deep of a card. But 16,000 people. And I know eventually, you know, when people, you know, when the UFC starts going back to cities, you know, twice a year, once a year, maybe you won't get the same crowds you're getting right now because people are still kind of coming out of the pandemic and it's been like 3 years since they've been, you know, to a live event. But, yeah, like, it's just the energy and everything. You just can't replicate that. Like, it's just such a different feeling. And, you know, I just, like I said, I don't really want to go back. Like, the Apex was cool for like 5 minutes. Like, it was, oh, I can hear the corners and I can hear the punches and I can hear when, like, you know, Kevin Holland's talking to an opponent in the ring. Like, all those kind of things are fun, but it quickly loses its appeal.
Yeah, and fighting there, I mean, to me, is not enjoyable at all. You know, once you get in there and start fighting, a fight's a fight, and it doesn't really matter. Like, walking out with no crowd, it doesn't have the same energy. You know, fortunately, like, I've been through it before. Like, I fought on the Ultimate Fighter. There's no crowd on Fighter. You know, it's foreign to me. And again, once the fight starts, it kind of doesn't really make a point. But it's more of the before and after. Like, before the fight, feeling the energy of that crowd is the most amazing thing ever. Just, you know, people over the place, like, shaking your hand, wanting to meet you, you know, coming to the hotels at, or, you know, whatever after party you get. And, you know, hearing the hearing the crowd chant after your fight and cheer, man, and after a big knockout, there's just not a better fucking feeling in the world, man.
Yeah, no, I know. Like I said, I embraced the Apex at the beginning. Maybe it's just because, like I said, the UFC got up and running again. I just was excited to see fights, you know, after we went a couple months basically without any fights. Yeah. But then, like, and like I said, at the beginning, it was kind of cool. Like, I remember, you know, the first couple of fights without fans, when it was like, oh man, it's cool. You can actually hear the coaches yelling and you can hear, you know, the fighters talking to each other and you can hear, like, the punches landing and things like that. Like, there were little things that you don't normally get to hear. And when you've been around the sport as long as you and I have, like, they kind of, maybe you take a little bit for granted, like, you don't hear these kind of things. But after, like I said, after about 6 months, the novelty wore off and I'm just like, God, this is just weird. Like, when a big punch lands or obviously this one's a little closer to home for us, but like when Stipe fought Francis Ngannou the second time, and Francis got that knockout. Now, listen, obviously Stipe's our guy, he's an Ohio guy, but like, that's a big moment, right? Like, the heavyweight title of the world going up for grabs, and Francis scores a huge knockout over a guy that absolutely thumped him the last time they fought, and it goes down, and it's just over. There's no crowd, there's no rip roll. There's like, it's just weird. Yeah. Like, it's just like one of the biggest moments in heavyweight history, and there's no reaction. Like, it's just dead silence.
Yeah, that's gonna go down in history as just a crazy time. It just sucks, bro. Like I don't know why they. Yeah, I mean, well, I know why they did it, but I don't know why they kept doing it. I take it back. Like, I know why they kept doing it, but I'm with you. It's time for it to stop. You know, they're more cards. I get it. It's cool. You know, business and everything. It's great. But for us, the fighters, it sucks. That's all there is. It's just not that cool. Like, we want crowds, man. That's like, that's a huge part of why we do this. We love being in front of the crowd. We love being under the lights. We love hearing the crowd cheer. At least it feeds me, gives me energy. And that's a huge part of the experience of when I go in there and fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, this past weekend, we did get a crowd in San Antonio. Of course, the main event, Corey Sandhagen defeated Marlon Chito Vera. I'll be honest, the fight didn't play out like I thought it would. I thought it would be a little bit more back and forth, kind of a battle. It really wasn't a battle. Corey Sandhagen largely dominated, really mixed together his game really, really well. A lot of takedowns, ground and pound with his striking, controlled the distance. You know, Chito had a couple of moments here and there, but largely it was a Corey Sandhagen win. I didn't think it was really close. And I think I scored a 50-45 or 49-46. It was no controversy there. Before we get to the controversy, which we'll talk about in a second with the one scorecard, what did you make of the fight? Because I know you were watching, and again, Corey's a guy I know, you've trained with him out in Colorado, so I know that's kind of your guy, but even I was like, as a guy who's actually been a big Corey Sandhagen guy for a lot of years, I thought this was one of his strongest performances.
Yeah, that was it right there. It wasn't just a Corey Sandhagen win, it was a Corey Sandhagen masterpiece, and we need to take a moment to appreciate the masterpiece that he put on, because he absolutely looked phenomenal in my opinion. And Chito, you know, with all due respect to him, I mean, stylistically was tailor-made for Corey to masterpiece, but Corey put on even more of a masterpiece than I expected him to. And when we talked about the fight before him, we said, look, you know, we all we were kind of 50-50 towards Corey a little bit. I think, you know, maybe I had a little bit of inklings of leaning towards Corey because we knew what he did Saturday was possible for him to do. The X factor, what we kept thinking, you know, was that Cheeto would eventually, you know, just catch him with a big shot or find his timing or something like he did with Dominic Cruz. So, you know, and Cheeto's that guy that is just always in there and always good. Problem, you know, if you could do that to Cheeto for 10 rounds and he'd still give you a problem. So again, I appreciate watching the fight and watching Corey Sandhagen because, you know, I can't say enough good things about how good and he fundamentally so sound, but also, you know, I tell all my fighters when I'm training guys, look, you know, if you guys kind of new, maybe they throw a lot of this wild stuff and spinning stuff and all this. And I always tell them, you have to know the rules first to break them. And when it came to Corey Sandhagen, he followed the rules very well and broke them at the appropriate. A lot of the things he does is sort of within the constructs of as a standard way to do things or a proper way, as some people would say, which, you know, there's no such thing, but he does a lot of things out of the box, but he did them on Saturday at all of the times against a dangerous guy like Cheeto that's always there to take advantage. And that's where Cheeto excels, I think, is when guys do get a little out of position, they get a little bit, try a little too hard to do. And he does a good job of getting them fired up and, you know, coming and being angry and, you know, getting him a little bit emotionally involved. And Corey just stayed stoic and just a perfect fight, I thought, man.
Yeah, that was the kind of fight. Like, I've been a guy for a long time saying Corey Sandhagen's going to be a champion one day, and that was the kind of a performance that kind of reaffirmed that for me. Like, obviously, he's had a couple losses in there. I mean, there's no shame in losing Petr Yan. Short notice, you know, he took that fight on shorter notice, went out there and had a fight with Petr Yan, lost that fight. Good for good for Petr Yan. He's still a monster. I thought he beat TJ Dillashaw. I thought that was a bad decision. I thought he clearly beat TJ. I still don't understand how that decision happened. But he has a loss on his record there. I don't agree with it. But yeah, like, there's still something about Corey. Like, I feel like he's still right there. And obviously, I know afterwards he called out Merab Dvalishvili. Seems like the perfect fight to make. We know Merab's not going to fight Aljamain. Corey did fight and lose to Aljamain a couple years ago, so it kind of seems like the perfect fight to make, especially with Sean O'Malley, you know, supposedly getting the winner of Cejudo and Sterling. So I think it's kind of the perfect fight to make. And that's I tell you what, that's a fascinating matchup with the way that Merab looked in his last fight and the way that Corey looked the other night, man. That's going to be, if it happens, that's an incredible fight.
Absolutely. That is a wild fight. I don't know what's going to happen in that fight.
If Sandhagen versus Merab happens, that's going to be an incredible fight. I hope it does happen. I don't know. Like, because Corey said, he told me beforehand, like, he thought about, he was going to call out O'Malley because he thought, you know, that would be a great fight. And I agree, that would be a banger too. And O'Malley's going to end up sitting out waiting for the winner of Cejudo and Aljamain. And they both said they want that fight, so I get it. But man, like, O'Malley's going to be sitting out for a while because, you know, Aljamain and Cejudo aren't going to fight until May. And then you got to imagine, unless there's a quick finish, like, they ain't fighting nobody until probably September, October at the earliest. Like, O'Malley's going to be out for a year. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not saying he should try to fight Sandhagen or you know, risk his title shot. But, yeah, it's kind of weird when it's, like, weird for the bantamweight division's at right now. But lots of good matchups.
Lots of good matchups. A lot of talent in that division. Just a fucking amazing group of talented fighters in that division, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get into the controversy from Saturday night, Matt, because, you know, the fight ultimately played out and scored, you know, we ultimately went to the right guy. We all agree Corey Sandhagen won the fight. He dominated for the largest part of five rounds. There was no doubt about that. But then the scorecards got read and Bruce Buffer read the first scorecard and he said the score was 48-47 for Chito Vera. And everyone was like scratching their head and saying, what in the hell is going on here? Of course, Sal D'Amato, Chris Lee, two more experienced judges, they ended up scoring it correctly. The right guy won. But it still goes down as a split decision. And the fact that one judge somehow saw that fight for Chito Vera is a massive problem. Now, I'm not saying, I know you said this on the show and I agree with you, Matt. We got to call their names out and we got to make this public so we understand who these people are and when they blow a call like this. The guy's name is Joel Ojeda. Now, I'm not trying to make Joel's life a living hell because I'm quite sure he's already heard about it from every single MMA fan on earth by this point. Here's the problem, Matt. This guy had only judged two fights in the UFC, two. And the other one was a prelim fight on the same card. Now... Now, I'm not saying he's not an experienced judge judging other cards, but this isn't even going into the criteria. We could have a, we've talked about having an entire show, and we will do that one day where we will sit down and like come up with what we believe would be a proper scoring criteria and how to fix it. Now, again, even though we can come up with this plan, doesn't mean it'll ever be enacted, but we can at least theorize, all right? Like we can say, well, here's how you should score a fight, get rid of 10-9, here's how we would score fights, blah, blah, blah. We're not going there today. The problem today is this Joel Ojeda guy had no business being a judge that night, for one. And for two, he certainly had no business judging the main event. Because his card, giving it 48-47 to Chito, is proof positive that he had no business being in that judge's chair on Saturday night. And thankfully, Chris Lee and Sal D'Amato got the score right. Because imagine if another judge had been just as bad as that guy, and then Corey Sandhagen sitting on a loss today that everyone and their mother knows he won. I mean, this is, and this also goes down as a problem, Matt, because a lot of times we get lost in, well, the right guy won, right? Well, yeah, the right guy won, but there's still a horrible scorecard. We can't ignore that.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make his life hell either, but I think he should find a different job, though. I don't care what his experience is. I don't care if he judged 100 fights before. Like, there is no excuse for that scorecard whatsoever. And that's all that there is to it. There, you have to struggle to find one round for Chito. And I know some people gave him a round, I think probably the third round.
Yeah, I think that was one round.
And it's ridiculous to give him the third round, like, because he landed a punch. You know, I mean, look, I love Chito Vera, one of my favorite fighters, but he did nothing to earn a single round on Saturday night. Not a single thing. No way. And I think he would come on and admit it himself. Like, I don't think he would be dishonest about it. You know, maybe it wasn't his best performance, or, you know, maybe something happened, whatever. I don't know. You know, he could, you know, talk about that. I'm sure he's moved on. You know, he's already talking about wanting to fight Petr Yan and things, but there is just simply no excuse for that scorecard, period. There's nothing else to even say about it. Like, that is the biggest bullshit scorecard I think I've ever seen.
It's so bad. And you made a great point on Twitter. Somebody brought it up to you and they were talking about Brian Barberina, and he's had a couple of big high profile fights recently. Obviously had to fight with Gunnar Nelson couple weeks ago, and listen, he's had a couple losses. That happens. I mean, you know, Brian's a good fighter, and he's had a couple losses. No shame there. But they were talking about opportunities. You know, opportunities come when you win, right? Like, that's just how the sport works. And you had mentioned something on Twitter about that, and that's again what gets lost. Like, your fight with Brian Barberina, incredible fight of the night. It was amazing. But when the right guy doesn't win, and then we just kind of move on from it, we forget about the other factors, which is, what opportunities didn't you get because you lost that fight versus what you would have gotten if you had won that fight? And we talk about, this is like a butterfly effect, right? You get one bad scorecard and you lose a fight. Not only do you lose half your money, maybe your next contract, they're like, you know what? We're not going to offer you quite as much money for your next contract. When another big fight comes up, maybe a guy falls out and you're like, you know what? Let me get in there. Let me get that fight. And like, well, you're coming off a loss. You know, we're going to look for somebody off a win, and little things like that. Opportunities go away. So we can't just sit here and say that, well, it was a close fight, you lost a close decision. We got to take into account all the reverberations, like an earthquake, like all the things that happened down the line from that one thing. Now, again, thankfully Corey Sandhagen got the win, and it should have been a unanimous decision. The right guy won. Again, we always say the right guy won, but we can't ignore that horrible scorecard, because guess what? the UFC is going to go back to Texas. They're going to go to Dallas. They're going to go to Houston. They're going to go to Austin. They're going to go somewhere else. And if that judge is anywhere near there, like, they should lock him out of the building. Like, they should literally just, like, put his phone, you know, like, they put up, like, the wanted posters. They should put up, like, the not wanted posters for this dude. Like, they should put up outside the building. If you see this man, please report him and make him exit the building. They should let him get nowhere near the scoring table of a UFC event again.
And like you said, the right guy won the fight. That's great. But there's only three judges. There's only three scorecards. Like, he was one away from, you know, losing that fight. You know, so you know, it just speaks to the larger problem. These guys, you know, whether it's the judges themselves or whether it is the actual scoring system is a little bit flawed and confusing. It's just a larger problem. And, you know, I'm glad that we're highlighting this because, you know, a lot of people would look over it because the right person won and it's just kind of forgotten about, but it needs to be highlighted. Like, he was one scorecard away. Corey was one scorecard away from getting this taken away from him. Now the fights, like, you know, for my, you brought up sort of some of my past fights, you know, and, you know, my arguments are a little different, right? Like, Corey's and Cheeto was a very, very blatant, obvious, like, anybody, a child could score those fights. My fights, I think, you know, that we were kind of referring to, you know, there's other ones too. We're probably a lot closer. And I think, you know, you just have to have a more of an understanding. And that's, you know, where I kind of get into the whole, like, judges suck thing. And they're just uneducated. This one isn't even just an uneducated. I mean, if somehow another judge scored that fight for Cheeto, like, we would be saying that was a, you know, there was money involved somewhere. Like, there's no possible way that you could have scored it like that. So, I mean, we've seen some pretty bad ones in the past, but that scorecard's got to be one of the top five. Cause like I said, Cheeto in the third round, as far as I remember, he landed like one punch. And don't look at, again, I'll go back. I've said it a million times before. Don't look at the fucking stats, the significant strikes, the total strikes. It's all fucking garbage, man. Like, you know, these guys, that's just human beings looking at the fight. And you know, and at least I know in boxing, that's what they do. They literally have clickers on their hands. With, you know, they click it with their thumbs when there's a fight, when there's a punch landed. And it's like, these people don't know whether it was significant or not. They don't know if it was a fucking clean punch or not. Like punches, there's such fine lines in between a punch that is meaningful / significant, whatever that's supposed to mean, and a punch that isn't, that just grazes or slides off. And sometimes a punch can even land very well and not be significant, you know, towards the outcome of an actual fight. And that's what, you know, in the rules or the judge thing, like, that's, you know, what they, I don't remember the wording, but, you know, it goes something along the lines of, you know, that's contributing towards the finish of a fight. So they say it's so many gray areas, and I'm not even sure that there is a perfect way, by the way, but again, we'll have a conversation about that sometime. And we'll lay everything out and, you know, make it all very clear, maybe take some notes and stuff beforehand, do some research. But the, you know, so I'm not sure that there is a perfect way or a perfect solution. But if that scorecard there isn't an obvious sign of something is fucked up here, something is wrong, something needs to change, then I don't know what is.
Two things. Let me mention what you said before. I've said this on Twitter before. Significant strikes is the stupidest, dumbest bullshit stat ever. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. Yeah. What is a significant strike, quote unquote? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you want to count strikes just so you have a strike count, okay, fine. Still shouldn't play into the factor of who you think won the fight or didn't win the fight. Now, to be fair, the judges don't actually have access to the stats, so I'll give them that credit. They don't have access to that information during the fight.
That's a great point, because I only bring that up because all the fans on you know, Twitter or whatever, everybody always brings it up. And I'm like, for one, that's a great point. They don't even fucking see that to start with.
So why? But I actually hate that they show it on the screen, because it's like, well, what does that even mean? Like, what is that? It doesn't mean anything. Like, you call a significant strike versus a strike. What the hell is the difference? Like, they'll have like you had 200 total strikes. You had 180 total, or 200 strikes thrown, 125 landed, and 100 of those were significant. What the fuck does any of that mean? How do you know those 100 were significant strikes? It's the stupidest. It's the dumbest, most misleading stat in history. It means nothing. It means I go crazy when people talk about significant strikes, because it means nothing.
I hate it when I see my own stats, because I'm like, oh, you're saying I hit him significantly 100 times? There's no way he's not knocked out if I hit somebody 100 times significantly.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So let me just start there. Ignore that stat, first and foremost. Like, if you're watching TV and they put up the stats, ignore it, because it means nothing, okay, first and foremost. Secondly, the other point I want to bring up about judging, and I've had this issue with Texas for a long time, the Texas Commission might very well be the worst commission in all of sports in terms of the athletic commissions, with the referees they use, with the judges they use, with some of the rulings. I mean, I think Texas was the state that overturned one of Curtis Blaze's wins because he tested positive for weed. I mean, just unbelievably stupid and just terrible decision-making by this commission. And here's the biggest problem, Matt. There's no uniformity between commissions. I've praised, left, right, and center, I have praised the California State Athletic Commission as the gold standard of athletic commissions. Andy Foster, the executive director there, goes out of his way to try to make real substantive changes to the rules and to the referees. Now, is it ever going to be perfect? No, you and I both know it's never going to be perfect. And I don't expect it to be perfect, because like, when there's really close fights, just because you scored the fight a different way doesn't mean it's a robbery. It just means it's a close fight. You know, I've had that argument. Like, we talked about Sean O'Malley, Peter Yan's a great example. You scored it for Yan, I scored it for O'Malley. But guess what? It was a close fight. I wouldn't argue with you one bit if you said Yan won. And then I know you didn't really argue with me that I said O'Malley won. It was a close fight. That's not a robbery. That's just a close fight. But what happened on Saturday night, one judge somehow scoring three rounds for Chito Vera. Oh my God. And the fact that this guy was anywhere near a judge's seat, and he'd never judged a UFC event before. I mean, I know the UFC doesn't go to Texas every week. I understand that, but there's a lot of events in Texas. And one thing that Andy Foster does, and Frank Trigg told me this, because Frank Trigg is a referee out there. And he said, one of the reasons why you don't see more fighters and more people involved with judging and refereeing is because Andy Foster requires you to go through hundreds of hours of training and hundreds of scorecards before he'll let you get near a Bellator or a UFC or a PFL, one of the major organizations. It's just like any other sport. You're not going to referee an NBA game unless you've refereed a lot of high school and college, and you know, you got to work your way up, say NFL, whatever. You're not going to do that unless you've already gone through the lower levels. Andy Foster makes the referees and the judges go through a just a ridiculous amount of training and then go out and score lower. So you will know, if you're in California, you will not sniff a UFC fight until you've judged, you know, LFA and all these other organizations, these regional promotions. And I'm not saying those fighters don't deserve to have their fight card scored correctly, but we're talking about, you know, again, minor leagues to major leagues. You keep moving your way up. He doesn't allow it. Well, guess what? Sure doesn't seem like Texas has those same requirements. If this guy is judging a main event and his first ever UFC fight was earlier the same night, like, that seems, and they had Dan Mergliotta judging fights. He's a referee. Now, I'm not saying Dan Mergliotta doesn't understand the sport, but what criteria, what world do we live in? Like, I think he hadn't judged a fight in like 15 years. Like, there must changes in 15 years. Like, Texas commission just boggles my mind. I've always said Texas and Florida are the two commissions that drive me the craziest, but Florida's actually come a long way in the last couple of years. Like, they've actually made some pretty sound decisions. I'm not saying they're perfect. Trust me, they made some really boneheaded decisions as well, but they've made strides to get better because a lot more MMA is going there. There's a lot of MMA in Texas. Like, they do a lot of events. They may not do UFC events every weekend, but there's a lot of events in Texas. The fact that through all the criteria and all the judges and all the people that could have worked there, they decided to put this guy in the main event. I mean, it's frustrating. And that is also, we talk about, like, we're not even talking about the criteria. We're not even talking about how to properly score fights. We're not even talking about the 10-point must system. We're just saying that, Matt, if you got to fight in Texas, I would call you and say, Matt, don't go there. Don't go there. Don't fight in Texas, because this is the risk you run.
Yeah. And that's a great point. I mean, when we talk about judging, that's just another layer to it, right? Like, what kind of professional job do you just step into at the highest level, right? You have to work your way up in every single profession, right? Yeah, I didn't even know that myself. That's ridiculous. And, you know, Ohio's pretty decent about it, too. Like, they're going to make you – you're going to be a reputable ref or judge when the UFC comes here. You're not going to be a first-timer guy. I don't know exactly what all the rules are and everything, but, yeah, that's just – well, you're just blowing my mind even more. I can't believe this.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, this is the issue, is that, like, now, like, you can't even, like, you don't, you have to now be specific about where you fight, because you got to be worried about, like, who are, because we're not, again, we're not even talking about the criteria. We're not talking about, like, this guy didn't know the criteria. Clearly he didn't, if he scored the fight for Chito Vera. But, like, we're not even getting into that. We're just getting into, like, the obvious.
You don't even have to know the criteria to score that fight for Corey.
Yeah, like,
know that it's a fight, and dude has to punch the guy in the face.
Yeah, like, through my career as a journalist, I've scored hundreds upon thousands of fights, you know what I mean? But even me, for all my experience, I still wouldn't feel comfortable sitting down and just judging a fight, because I haven't gone through the proper instruction. Yeah. I haven't sat in, cause, like, I actually have sat in a couple of California State Athletic Commission meetings where Andy Foster will lead matches for referees and judges, and they'll have discussions. Like, we actually rewatched Aljamain Sterling and Petr Yan, the second fight, when I thought there should have clearly been a 10-8 round in there. And they debated that round, and they were talking about why it was or wasn't. And, you know, it was, they voted on it, and they had a discussion. And, you know, some judges were like, here's why I would give it that. Here's why some judges wouldn't. And they had another fight. I think it was Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald from your card, where you fought Tim Means. They scored that one. They had discussions. They talked. Everyone had a chance to weigh in their opinion. And Andy Foster was talking about criteria, blah, blah, blah. Now, I'm not saying commissions in, like, Texas and Florida, other places don't do this. And I'm not going to continue to sit here and, like, bang the drum to just go to California. But, like, these are the issues we're talking about. Like, are you actually using educated judges? Do they truly know the criteria? Have they scored hundreds of fights before they're actually getting to judge Matt Brown or Corey Sandhagen or Chito Vera? Like, it just blows my mind that this guy was anywhere near a judge's chair. Like, that's just a bad commission. Like, that's not even bad refereeing. Like, that's like you saying, Damon, I know you like cars. You own a car, so I need you to replace the engine in my car. I'm just going to leave you be. And you're going to switch out the engine in my car. Guess what, Matt? I don't know shit about replacing engines in cars. I could probably go in there and unscrew some shit, and some shit will fall off your car. But does that mean I know how to fix an engine in your car? No. You shouldn't put me anywhere near there, because you didn't qualify me as a mechanic. That's basically what they did on Saturday. Like, do you know fights? Yeah, I know fights. Do you watch fights? Sure. Here, go judge the main event of a freaking UFC event.
Yeah, he was probably the guy in the crowd yelling, why don't you just get up and knock him out? you know, speaking of journalists scoring fights, that reminds me of an interesting little thing. You know, back, you know, where judging started actually was back in, you know, in boxing, it used to be basically unlimited rounds, you know, they go 100 rounds, whatever. And then they started being shorter. Right. They just simply didn't have the time for it, you know, and there were, you know, a lot of different reasons. And what they would do, right, they never did hire judges until I want to say like the 30s or the 40s. And it might have even been later than that, maybe the 50s or 60s. I have to reread up on my boxing history. But anyway, they used to have the newspapers would judge the fights. You know, if you ever hear the old story about, I believe it was Willie Pep that one round without throwing a punch, like, that he didn't actually win the round, but the newspapers had him winning the round.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's which, from, you know, you say, oh my gosh, but, you know, the story is he truly did win the round, right? Like, his defense is that amazing, you know. But
yeah,
I'm not sure, you know, Willie Pep was amazing defensively, but anyway, You know, that's, I think that, I don't think that's something that should be completely thrown out either. You know, there's no, I don't know. Again, we will have to have a whole conversation about this. I put more thought to it, but I don't think there's any reason why you couldn't have a lot of people scoring a fight, you know, educated people. You know, why does it only have to be three or, you know, four or five judges? Why couldn't you have, you know, a lot of media people do it?
Well, there's so many things that they had. Like, I know in New Jersey, they talked about trying where they were going to put judges in like an isolation booth where you wouldn't hear the crowd. You would just like watch the fight. You know what I mean? And then I've heard like, you know, putting them in a booth where you don't hear the, you know, where you're not by the cage. Cause I've said the one judge, one criticism, but one defense I've had of judging in MMA is that I've sat cage side hundreds of times. And I would say out of those hundreds of times, let's say I've been to 500 UFC events. I have no idea. I'm making that number up. 500 UFC events. I probably spend about 375 of those staring up at the screens, because with the actions right in front of you, it's hard to see. Or you're on the other side of the cage, or you're in grappling exchanges on the ground. It's tough to see from that vantage point. Now, granted, the judges are about 5 feet closer and they are elevated. Like, they're actually up at the eye level of the octagon. I'm a little lower than the octagon on the table for media, so they have a little better vantage point, but ultimately they're still looking at, you know, when you're across the cage, like, it doesn't seem like it's very far, but it is far. Like, you can't really see the nuances of, like, when someone's going for a submission sometimes when they're all the way across the cage. So, like, they've talked about doing that where you put them in the back and they have a TV screen, because you can see better on the screen. Like, you just can. That's the reason why when you watch the commentary teams, when you watch Joe Rogan or John Anik or whoever, they're watching the monitors. They're not watching the octagon. They're watching the monitors because they get a better view of what's actually happening. So, yeah, like, there's all kinds of issues here of what you can do to fix it. Again, I'm not trying to get into like a whole conversation of fixing judging, but this one was so egregiously bad that it's not even like the criteria. It's not like, you know, it's not like he wasn't looking at the screen. This guy just had no idea what he was looking at. Like, he was just,
I finished with like, okay, we could always say it's not the criteria, but dude, you don't even need to know the criteria. Like, that was, it is that bad of a decision. Like, this is again, my mom could have watched that. And my mom doesn't even watch my fights, by the way. So when I use her as an example, she's not a big MMA fan. She wishes I didn't do this. So, you know, she could watch, my grandmother could watch the fights and tell you who won that one. You know, like, this, it was that bad of a decision. And, you know, we could harp on it all night, man. And, you know, we did on Twitter a little bit, and, you know, and it's the same thing, man. We're just going to, it's like another bad decision. This one just to me was just the fact he gave him three rounds too. You know, if it was like one round in question, right? I think one judge gave him a 49-46, right? They, maybe a different judge gave him, some people were talking about third round. He gave him three rounds. Yeah. Like, you cannot justify that. That is absolutely fucking ludicrous. Get the fuck out of here with that.
And as I said, and just to close out on this, Matt, and again, the right guy won. You know, we keep saying that, you know, thankfully. But there was also, like, I know there was talk about, like, the Macy Barber-Andrea Lee fight. There was a little controversy in that scorecard that night. I didn't get into, like, the, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't watch that fight from start to finish. I basically watched the main and co-main from start to finish. I was gone on Saturday, so I wasn't actually watching the event from start to finish. But anyways, again, I just want to mention again, the right guy won, but we also talk about when the right guy doesn't win, the opportunities that get taken away. We talk immediately about losing half. There's just so many repercussions of when a judge gets it wrong. Like I said, we blow up and say, oh my God, this guy got robbed. But then you think about, well, they just lost half their paycheck, opportunities, maybe sponsors, maybe their next con. Like, again, I think that has to be pointed out. Like, yes, Corey Sandhagen won and the right guy won. And thankfully two judges actually watched the fight. But again, as you said, imagine if one guy didn't. Imagine if one more guy. And he got it. And now what? Corey's what? He's on, you know, he's on a loss. He, you know, that Merab fight goes away. He's no longer close to a title shot. Like, so many things go away because these judges can screw up a fight.
Yeah. And then we forget about it tomorrow. Right? And we that's talk why, about blow up, talk our Twitter shit, talk our podcast shit. And we're like, all right, on to the next thing. There's too many fights anyway. So,
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's the realism, right? Like, you, like, when, again, I keep going back to you because we talked, and I know yours was a closer fight. But again, you lost half your pay. You know, maybe you would have been, maybe you would have gotten a top 15 fighter. I know you said on the podcast, you know, you're not necessarily chasing titles anymore, but like, you could have had a co-main event or a main, or a main card fight on a big pay-per-view. Like, again, little things like that go away because you're off a loss and not a win.
Well, you know, in my particular situation, you know, like I said, I lost to Condit and now Barbarina, right? So I'm on a 2-fight losing streak. Both of them, I felt like I won. I think, you know, there is an argument to be made that, that Condit beat me. So, you know, I'm not going to, again, I'm not going to harp on it. I don't dwell on either of these. It's just part of the conversation that we're having right now. But on a 2-fight winning streak versus a 2-fight losing streak, your mind is a lot different on where you're going to go with your career, right? Like right now, you know, I'm saying, yeah, I'm probably not, you know, not really looking to get a title fight or anything. I'm just going to do a few more fights and do it for fun and things like that. Whereas if I was on a 2-fight winning streak against those guys, you're like, okay, maybe I would start thinking about, you know, going for a run or something, you know? And it's not that that's out of the question now anyway, but, you know, that's not where my mind's at. I'm like, I got to get back on the W column.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is not, you know, just exclusive to me. This is just my situation that I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Real quick, obviously we talked a little bit about scoring and everything. This past weekend, you mentioned boxing with Willie Pep. This past weekend, there was a big boxing match. David Benavidez beat Caleb Plant. You know, it's funny going in. I'm again, I've said this a million times on the show. I'm not a huge boxing guy. Matt, you are a huge boxing guy, but I do watch the big fights. This was a big fight. I'm a big Benavidez guy. I like him a lot. And I actually thought going into the fight that Caleb Plant was being a little bit underrated. Turns out I was right with my initial instinct that David Benavidez is a freaking badass because man, he looked good. And boy, I tell you what, he looked amazing, and now he wants Canelo, and I'm just like, I don't know if Canelo really wants Benavidez. I don't know. You tell me. Like, am I a little too high on the David Benavidez train right now?
No, I was never as high on the David Benavidez train until last weekend, and I've been fairly high on him. I just never thought he really had a chance to beat Canelo, or I kind of thought Caleb Plant would probably give him a tougher time than he did. I thought Caleb would probably make him miss a lot more, and, you know, Caleb made it difficult for him, but – you know, Benavidez shined, you know what I mean? So now watching Benavidez come up through the ranks, I've been watching him for a while, and I am set he is going to beat Canelo. Just stylistically, I think he's a terrible matchup for Canelo. I think with his jab, he's got one of the best jabs out there. He's long, he's tall, he hits very hard, has a lot of power. And I don't think Canelo's ever dealt with someone like that. And I think that that's kind of Canelo's weakness, really, is like someone that can jab well and, you know, withstand the power or hit him with some power, I should say. And, you know, Canelo's going to hit him, though, also. And I think that's going to be the biggest question is if Benavidez can handle Canelo's power. And Canelo is very slick and has very good defense, but you know, Canelo's going to try to walk him down. That's what he generally does, right? He's sort of a pressure guy, likes to walk you down. He's gotten slicker and slicker over the years, but, you know, he really shines when he walks people down. And I don't think he's going to be able to walk down David Benavidez because of his jab and his power.
Let me ask you this, Matt. I'm asking this question because, again, I'm not as experienced and understanding of boxing. But obviously, like, when Canelo went up and lost a fight to Dimitri Bivol, like, I think even though he was going up a weight class and obviously, and all those things were in account, people were still, you know, thinking this is Canelo at his best. Canelo's, you know, still pound for pound best guy in the world. And then Bivol put on a performance and you're like, okay, well, maybe it was a bad idea going up that high in weight, whatever the case may be. I think back, now obviously their ages are different. I know that. Like, when Canelo fought Triple G, I thought he lost, you know, he lost. He did. Yeah. So, but the third
fight.
Yeah. So the third fight was not really great. Like, it was Canelo and Triple G. You could just tell he was a little older. You know, he wasn't the same Triple G that was just blowing people out of the water, you know, five, 6 years ago. And we all knew it at that point. Now, that's not to say Triple G can't go out there and knock out some people and win some more fights. I'm just saying, like, maybe he's not that guy anymore. Like, he's not the number one guy anymore. Maybe number three, number four. Is Canelo, are people catching up to Canelo a little bit now, or is Canelo slowing down at all, or is this just really like the competition is just that much better now? Because I remember a few years ago, outside of the Triple G fight, like, there was just not a fight where I felt like confident somebody could beat Canelo. Now, I fully admit I did think Triple G could do it, and I did think he did it at least once. But again, that's neither here nor there. But I don't know. Like, I'm not saying this as a negative to Canelo. I'm just saying, like, is there some validity in the competition's catching up to Canelo, and maybe is Canelo taking a step back now? I don't know. I'm curious.
I'll tell you my opinion, and you know, there's going to be a lot of different opinions on all those questions that you have there, right? I can only give you my opinion. I picked Bivol to beat him. And not just because of the size, but because Bivol is very fundamental and a little bit awkward, but does the fundamentals just so fucking well and moves very well and has a great jab. That's, again, when you talk about fundamentals of boxing, like having a great jab goes farther than just about anything else. That's why Triple G beat him the one time that he did beat him, even though they didn't give it to him. You know, it was because of the jab. I also see, in my opinion, Canelo has never been as great as they've made him out to be. He is a great boxer. He's a champion. He's a Hall of Famer, all that, but he's not number one pound for pound. I never has been, in my opinion. I believe he's lost a few fights. Arslandi Lara, for one, I think beat him really badly, actually. I picked Bivol to beat him. Now I'm picking Benavidez to beat him. And again, I've just never been as big on Canelo. I'm a huge Canelo fan, so I'm not like putting him down or anything or trying to be, you know, that guy or anything, you know. But to be honest, I just don't think he is as great as they make him out to be. And one of the things I love about Canelo is he goes out to prove you wrong too. Like he went up in weight to fight Bivol, and that was very respectful. He fought Triple G three times, which I didn't think he would do. With all I said, yeah, I think the competition's catching up to him. And because he was never that far above all these guys to begin with.
So it's a kind of a combination thing. It's that not necessarily he's losing a step. It's maybe that he wasn't, in your opinion, maybe. Now, I hate using the word overrated, but maybe a little bit. He was made to be a little bit better than what he actually was, like that kind of thing. Like just a little bit, like, yeah. You know, like people are going to lose their minds when I say this, like, because I've picked him many, many times, but like a little bit of our. Like when Conor McGregor was on top of the world and he was beating everybody, he looked unstoppable. But then you put him against Khabib, that's just a bad matchup, and he's just not Khabib. Like he's just not. That's just going to be a fight that he's going to lose probably 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, just because that's always going to be a bad matchup for him. In a way, Canelo's a little bit of that. Like he's probably going to struggle with Bivol every single time. Like that's never going to be a fight that he's going to look good in. Is that?
I think your analogy stands up somewhat. I would only disagree a little bit because I actually think Conor is that good.
I'm not saying Conor's not. I'm saying like in certain matchups. Like I'm not saying Conor lost the step. I'm just saying like. As on top of the world as Conor was, Khabib was always going to be a bad matchup for him.
Yeah, and this is where I think we've had this conversation before where I disagree a little bit. I think he actually, if he stays himself and trains the way he did coming up and puts everything together, I don't think Khabib beats him 10 out of 10 times. I think it's more like 5 out of 10. I think Conor is way closer to beating Khabib than people think he is.
I disagree on that one. I disagree. It's not because
I think everybody would disagree, but I see a lot of little details when I watch that fight. I watched it like 3 or 4 times, and Conor made very, very small mistakes in stopping the takedown. Very small, which I guarantee if he goes back, has the right coaches and everything, has that hunger to train and drill like he used to, I think they could be fixed, and I think he could come back and beat him.
I mean, I think if Conor could do to Khabib what Volkanovski did to Islam, except you have Conor's power, because Volkanovski's not known as a power puncher. He's a volume puncher. He'll put your lights out, but he'll do it over four rounds. Conor can do it with one hand. If Conor had that kind of takedown defense, it's a different fight. I just haven't seen him. I've said this a million times, and I appreciate his loyalty to John Kavanaugh, and I appreciate everything, but like, I want Conor to work with like world class. Like, I want him to bring in, you know, Bo Nickel and, you know, and Gable Steveson guys like that, like Roman Bravo Young, who just won an NCAA. Like, bring in these just monstrous wrestlers who are going to, you're not going to throw punches. They're just going to put you on the ground and you got to get up. Like, I want to see, and I just, that's the one thing I feel like that's always been missing from Conor's game in terms of the wrestling, because even Poirier was taking him down. I'm not saying Poirier isn't a good wrestler. Poirier is an incredible fighter all the way around, but I'm saying like, Poirier is not a guy you would look at and say, man, his takedowns are just off the charts. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what Poirier does at his very best. He's known for his incredible boxing, his lightning quick speed, and all. I want to see
it's all hypothetical.
It is.
Me personally believing that Conor, more of his fall off was due to his own personal partying and issues than it was his talent. I think he has the talent to beat anybody in the world. I think he actually has the talent to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time. But he enjoyed the spoils of war too much, and it's over. And that's why it's so hypothetical now, because he's not going back to that grind that he was in one time. He's not going to – he's still going to win fights. I think he has a great shot against Chandler. I think it's going to be an amazing fight. But he's not going to go through that wrestling grind that he has to go through to beat Khabib.
You wonder, like, it's so crazy. When he beat Eddie Alvarez, and I was there that night, and that was one of the most incredible performances, the way he just absolutely danced around. I mean, it was – Eddie Alvarez is a really good fighter, and he just – I mean, it looked like a mismatch. Like, it was not it was not a fight. Like, you don't do that to Eddie Alvarez. Like, Eddie Alvarez loses sometimes. He doesn't lose like that. You know what I mean? You do not do that to Eddie Alvarez. He just, I mean, it was, I was like, I was stunned. And I picked Conor to win that fight, but I was like, my God, I didn't expect it to go like that. You wonder if he just continues on at that point and doesn't do the Mayweather fight. Like, because I think that was Conor's peak. And if Conor kept going after that in 2016, going into 2017, I would agree with you. I think we might be talking about the greatest mixed martial artist in history. He was on a run. His confidence was sky high. He was as good as ever. He took that. I don't fault him for taking that payday, by the way. He took a $100 million payday. Anyone would do that. I would do that today, Matt. You know what I mean? Matt, we talked the last couple weeks ago, like, you would never fight your friends. If somebody offered us $100 million to fight each other, the fight would last 8 seconds, but fuck yeah, I'd take that money, and you would too. $100 million, hell yeah. And it would be the easiest fight of your life. But I'm just saying, like, I don't fault him for taking the money. That's life-changing. That's generation-changing money. But I also think that one moment changed everything for the course of his career.
Yeah, changed everything for the course of mixed martial arts, period, right? Like, wouldn't Gotto be where he's at right now had Conor not done that? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so weird. Like, it's just like that one, like, I'm of two minds. Like, I can't say he did it wrong because, of course, $100 million, second biggest pay-per-view in history, of course you do that. But on the flip side, I just don't think Conor was ever the same after that. Like, he took off 2 years. He came back and fought a Khabib who was hungry, who was just nasty at that point. He had all the, just, that was Khabib in 2019 or 2018 when they, or 2018 when they fought, was what Conor was in 2016. You know what I mean? Like, he had, oh man, he was on, you know, on a roll, and he looked like a monster.
He was only boxing. Like, boxing is fucking hard, but it is not wrestling hard.
Yeah.
Like, when you grind with wrestlers, with high level wrestlers, it is a different fucking grind that not every, like, it sucks, bro. Especially for the first like year, 2 years. Like I was at the Ohio RTC with those guys for years. And I never got to their level, but dude, when I say it sucks, like, I was young and it sucks every day. Like, the things that wrestlers can do to you are the worst things that you could imagine. And And when I say what they could do to you, yes, they could do sexual things to you if they wanted to, right? like when you're going with a guy smaller than you that can put you in any position he wants at any moment that he wants, like that is so much more miserable than just getting punched in the face a bunch of times. Like I would rather get punched in the face any day by fucking Floyd Mayweather or Canelo or Bivol or whatever. Then you go up against these Olympic level wrestlers, you know, like a Bo Nickel, right? Like,
didn't you used to train with Logan Stieber when he was there? He was down there when you were there.
Me?
Yeah.
I mean, Logan was there, but he, I mean, he's a 140 pounds. I didn't go with him.
I wasn't sure. He's still a monster though. Like that's what I'm talking about. Like, it's just a, yeah,
don't
yeah.
get me wrong. He probably still fucked me up, but no, some of my main training partners down there, you know, for somebody named Keith Gavin was probably one of my main guys. He's the head coach at Pitt now. He was number two on the Olympic ladder. He might have even got on a world team once or twice. But, you know, he's every bit of world medalist level. He was one of my main guys. Mike Basilo was a big guy. He was a two-time national champion. And one of the things I found out about him is he actually won one of those with a torn pec. Like, I mean, this is what I'm talking about with wrestlers. Like, these guys are a different fucking breed, man. Like, are you seeing any boxers out there winning with torn pecs? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, it is a different fucking breed of person, man. And these guys aren't doing it for the glory, right? Are doing it for money. Right. Like, you know, Canelo might be one of the toughest guys in the world, but he's also getting paid $50 million every time he steps in there. These guys are doing a 10 times tougher sport and they ain't getting jack shit. you know, I mean, they get a little bit, you know, they live a decent lifestyle or whatever, but, you know, they're on the fucking mats all day, man. When you talk about a different sport, like you can't, like you can't describe it until you feel it. Like it's something you have to go in and do and you have to experience to understand how miserable it can be. I went with Kyle Snyder, for instance, when he was 16 years old. He was on a recruiting trip. And because NCAA regulations, he's not allowed to go with the team. So they put him with me, you know, just this, you know, stupid fighter guy that'll go head to head with anybody and, you know, scrap hard as I can and give him a good look, right? And thank God he went on to be a freaking Olympic champion, one of the best wrestlers America's ever seen. Because I'm 32 years old at the time. He's 16. And, I mean, he literally could have done anything he wanted to me. I had no recourse whatsoever. So, and you're talking about a 16-year-old kid. You know, like, wrestling is different, bro. when you're in there with these guys, like, JD Bergman was one of my favorite guys, you know, because I mean, he could just again, another guy could just do anything he wanted to me. You know, he was a Big Ten champion, All American more than once. You know, and at the time I was going with him, he's wrestling at 211 pounds. So he's walking around 215. And, you know, he was being pretty light with me most of the time. But you're talking about, you know, you're bending down for an hour straight with a guy pulling down on you and pushing you, you know, pulling on your back, pulling on your neck, grabbing your arms. And again, there's nothing you can do to stop it. People don't understand until you've experienced it. They don't understand when I say there's nothing you can do to stop it. There is nothing it's like me playing with my children.
It's funny you say that because I remember talking to Kyle Dake a couple years ago, Olympic bronze medalist, four-time world champion, four-time NCAA champion, one of the best wrestlers in America today. And I remember I interviewed him a couple years ago before the Olympics, and he had talked about doing a grappling match with Khabib, like a grappling, not a wrestling match, a grappling match, like a, you know, pure grappling match. He's like, yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. I asked him, I was like, so you're talking about grappling, not wrestling. And he kind of laughed. He's like, no, not wrestling, grappling. And I was like, oh, so you wouldn't want to wrestle him. He's like, no, that's not a fair fight. Like, that's just not fair. Like, me wrestling Khabib is not fair. And I said the same thing to Kyle Snyder, because Kyle at one point was like, I want to fight. And, you know, he eventually said, I don't want to fight. I'm just going to stick to winning gold medals and winning medals from the United States. And I said at some point, I said, would you ever consider doing like a wrestling match, like for fun? Like, you know, like they had like, you know, whatever. And he's like, it just wouldn't be fair. Like when Jordan Burroughs wrestled Ben Askren after he'd been out of wrestling, remember when they did that at Beat the Streets a couple years ago? And it was like 16-0 or what? It was like it was over in like 2 minutes. And that's Ben Askren. He was an Olympian, a 2-time national champion. And Jordan just toyed with him, because when you're wrestling on a daily basis, like it's a different level. Like, Khabib is an incredible wrestler. Islam Makhachev is an incredible wrestler. You throw him in against Kyle Snyder, against David Taylor, against Kyle Dake, they're going to get wrapped up like a bow and thrown down to the ground, because it's just a different, like I said, it's just different wrestling. And that's a great wrestler for MMA. So, yeah, but that's what I talk about with Conor, going back to the Conor conversation. Like, when you're not that guy for a little while, you just lose it. And I just don't think he ever got it back. And that's not to say I don't think Conor's great. I think Conor's incredible. But I just think it's like that one moment in his life. He zigged left, and I don't blame him for taking the payday. But imagine if he had zigged right. Imagine if he had just kept going on that path where he was the baddest motherfucker on the planet.
Right, and you see that in all fighters and even all athletes all together. Right, you have a window of time when you're firing on all 8 cylinders, and as soon as one of those cylinders starts misfiring, somebody's taking your spot, man, because they're going to be firing on all 8 cylinders. And that's the game, man. That's what makes it so exciting. Everybody's so fucking hungry. And, you know, and Conor's not on all 8 cylinders anymore. And like I said, if he was for a long time, I think he, you know, again, it's hypothetical, but I think he could have beat anybody in the world.
Well, I mean, let's not forget, I mean, I'm just, you know, throwing this out there, that, you know, there was once upon a time on our old podcast when someone was convinced that Jose Aldo was going to beat Conor McGregor, and there's somebody else sitting on the other side who said Conor McGregor's going to win, and I put down $250 against somebody else, and I said Conor McGregor's going to win, and then, you know, it was 16 seconds later, I was right. I'm not saying the other person who made that bet's the other person on the other end of this conversation, but I'm just saying, I'm definitely a Conor guy. Like, I picked Conor many, many times. I just, again, I know this is a little slightly different conversation. We talked about it last week with the whole age thing, like, you know, fighters over 35 fighting for UFC titles, like 2-28, whatever the ridiculous record is at lower weight class, be smaller than 185. And I know age is a slightly different conversation, but it's the same kind of thing, like same kind of theory. Like when something changes, when that younger guy is hungry and that guy's coming for you and you lose just a little bit of a step, whether it's just maybe you're not wrestling as much or maybe you're sleeping on silk sheets or whatever we want to talk about, like that, just that little bit is the difference between winning and losing in this sport. And when that other guy comes up and he's willing to do what you're not, or he's doing what you're not that you're not willing, but he's just doing it at a different level than you're doing it. That's the nature of the beast, man. Like I said, this is man versus beast kind of thing. You know what I mean? When you lose, and I think Conor, I 100% believe without doubt in my mind, if he had fought Khabib right after the Eddie Alvarez fight without skipping a beat, I'd be with you 50-50. 100% I'd be with you. Coming back from the Mayweather fight, I was no longer 50-50.
Right. So that's where I'm at. Like, and I don't even know if necessarily right after the Eddie Alvarez fight, but, you know, I think it would have been more competitive for sure at that point. I don't even know if Conor was going through that wrestling grind at that point. But yeah. I think my whole point is, if Conor took that time at some point in his career, went through that wrestling grind, I think, you know, he would excel in it. And I think he'd be able to beat Khabib.
Yeah, he could. I mean, he could, dude. Throw that guy in the Penn State wrestling room.
And when you're talking about guys like Conor and Khabib, you know, fighting at that level, you know, especially, you know, like guys like Khabib fighting at that level. I mean, you know, to beat a guy like that, you know, you're not going to beat him 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah,
like,
no.
That's just the nature of the sport, right? You're not beating the guy 10 out of 10 times. Like, I don't think Alex is going to beat Izzy 10 out of 10 times. And they might end up fighting 10 times. But, you know, Izzy's going to have to find that magic moment, you know? But that'll be next week's conversation. But, you know, again, when you're at that level, like 10 out of 10 doesn't work. Like, you have to be so on point that single night.
It's so funny, before we get out of here, we talk about Khabib and his team, the monsters. I mean, good God, that team right now. You got, obviously, Khabib's retired. He's not coaching as much now, but you got Islam Makhachev on top of the world. You got Usman Nurmagomedov ruling over in Bellator. You got Umar Nurmagomedov, who is a freaking monster. All these up-and-comers. And then I just broke the news last week. The Olympic silver medalist in wrestling from 2020, who beat Kyle Dake, blanked him 11-0 in the Olympics. His full name, check out this name, Matt. Now, he goes by a different name now. Magomed Khabib Khajimagomedov. That is like the most badass Russian name. Like, you are just fucked fighting that guy. Listen to that. Magomed Khabib is his first name. You got those two names combined, you ain't beating this dude. He's going by Khajimagomedov. Khajimagomedov is what he's going to go by professionally now in MMA. He signed with Bellator. He trains with the Nurmagomedov team. He came up under the Nurmagomedov team in Dagestan. Holy shit. Like, here's another one. A silver medalist. He's a featherweight. He's going to fight a featherweight. He beat Kyle Dake 11-0 in the Olympics 2 years ago. Oh my God.
This is what's so fucking exciting about this sport, man. When I was coming up in this sport, I mean, I guess we had like Mark Coleman and, occasionally, an amazing athlete like that. But, these guys are starting to make the move into MMA and, like the Bo Nichols and, Khaji. And I mean, bro, this is, even the kickboxers, Alex and Izzy, this sport is going fucking places, man. It's just amazing, bro. Like, the athletes coming into this sport, wow. We're off to the races now, and it's just going to be a sight to see. And I'm glad I don't have to fight that son of a bitch. That's all I can tell you.
Well, we're going to talk about some fights next week, because next week is going to be our official preview show for UFC 287. We're going to talk about Israel Adesanya against Alex Pereira, 4, 5, 3, 2, whatever you want to call it. They fought four times now, two times in MMA. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait to talk about that. We're also going to talk, of course, about Gilbert Burns and Jorge Masvidal. That's an incredible fight. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to break down fights, give our picks and predictions, and break down everything from that. And, of course, the fallout. This weekend, we don't have as many cards. PFL's coming back. Of course, Bellator's got a card. Of course, there is that Game Bread boxing event with Roy Jones Jr. against Anthony Pettis. That's an interesting one, on maybe different levels than what we're thinking. And then Jose Aldo boxing Jeremy Stephens. Jacare is boxing Vitor Belfort. So I don't know. We'll see how this whole thing plays out over the weekend. So we'll maybe talk a little bit about that on Monday. I don't know. We'll see. But we're going to definitely talk about UFC 287 next week, of course. And we'll get 1 week closer to Matt's fight as we continue with the camp countdown, so to speak, for Matt Brown versus Court McGee up on May 13. Matt, before we get out of here, where can people check you out? Where can people support your sponsors? Support the people who are supporting you.
Yeah, you can check me out on Instagram and Twitter at I Am The Immortal, Facebook, The Immortal Matt Brown. Check out my sponsors, routine.co, routine.co, multivitamin, precision nutrition, specifically made for you. They take your blood, your DNA, build a multivitamin around what you need, your deficiencies. What else? TheImmortalCoffee.com. No crash coffee, man. Best coffee you're ever going to have. Have you had my coffee, by the way, Damon?
I have not had your coffee.
Why are you sly? Aren't you a coffee guy?
I'm not a big coffee guy, no.
Oh, that's why you haven't had it.
Yeah, right? I'm not. But you could still give us some coffee, because my girlfriend loves coffee. She loves coffee, so she's the one. She could probably testify to the immortal coffee. So if you want to give me some coffee. Place
about 15, 20 minutes away from your house where you can go purchase them.
Oh, really? Where is this at?
It's in Lewis Center. It's called
the Immortal Martial Arts Center. Let's get another advertisement. I was trying to lead you in that advertisement there. Let's lead into the gym that's making champions up there in Lewis Center, Ohio.
Yeah, well, so far a bunch of amateur champions at least, but hey. We got some guys working their way up. The nice thing about my gym is like all the guys are homegrown. There's not any guys that, I don't invite guys to come from other gyms and stuff. Local gyms I do, but I'm not inviting guys to come. I'm not trying to swindle or pay guys to come train, build this badass team like that. Like, I want all the guys coming up under me, building that trust and loyalty. And, they're few and far between, but that's what it's all about, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so make sure you check out all that stuff to support Matt. And, of course, we'll be back next week with another edition of Fighter vs. Rider talking about UFC 287. Make sure you check us out on all of your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and, of course, over on the best website in the world, MMAfighting.com. We will see you next week for another edition of the Fighter vs. the Rider. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you then.
Vox Media Podcast Network.